Good evening, family. My name is Mike. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm glad to be here. I just really quickly want to say I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I sponsor men and women, and I expect them to sponsor men and women if they are capable. My home group is A Vision for You. We meet on Thursday nights in Union. We're the only meeting in Union on Thursday night. Please come see us. My sobriety date is October 1st of 2008. And I'm not a guru in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just an average dude who was a seemingly hopeless drunk, and I found a way out. Still an alcoholic, always be an alcoholic, but I've recovered from the seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, which was how I felt September 30th, 2008. This is not to replace having your own experience with this book with a sponsor. This is just for us to have a new experience. And I was asked to read this book as I read it with my sponsees, and I've been through the steps a few different ways, and this is how I currently read this book with my sponsees. So, we're actually going to be on page 25 on the bottom page. And it says, this first part is going to be just review. We left off with these two alternatives. But if you're a seriously alcoholic, as we were, we believe there's no middle of the road situation. In fact, there's no like 95% solution or for me. My fourth step, I either do it or I don't. The thing that I leave out is the thing I was trying to get to. We are in a position where life is becoming impossible, and if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. So I'm told to ask a question here. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other to accept spiritual help. So as I'm reading this with my sponsor, he's been explaining a lot of alcoholism, his alcoholism to me, and I've been identifying. I've been saying, this dude knows stuff about me that I never told anybody. And I believe, you know, I was told they wrote a book about me, and this is kind of what I'm finding, is that this book is talking about me. And, you know, as I say all the time, you can do whatever you want in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm done telling people they have to do the steps, because I don't know if they have to do the steps. But my experience is this is what changed me. This allowed me to find power greater than myself. So anyway, so for this alcoholic, saying I identify with everything they're talking about up to this point, I have two alternatives. And the one is to go on the way I've been going, blotting it all out to a slow death. You know, my experience is it's not a quick death. In fact, I couldn't die. I kind of wanted to die. I had accepted that I was going to die, and I was tired of waking up. In all truth, I was pissed off every morning that I woke up again. And the other is to accept spiritual help. And I don't know about anybody else, but this alcoholic sort of goes, You know, because this spiritual help is very foreign to me. And the misery that I've been in is something I know well. I know how to navigate misery. I blot it out with alcohol. It's not really working anymore. So, do I want to go on the way I've been going? And again, do I believe that these are my two choices? I do. And so the other is to accept spiritual help. Accept. This book we talked earlier, it says precisely how we've recovered. It tells us precisely how to have this experience. So it says, this we did because we honestly wanted to. And we're going to actually move up to page 30. I don't feel like explaining every week how I do the process that I do, but I'd love to talk to you afterwards why I'm moving up to page 30. And we're going to start at the beginning. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. And the book earlier talks about real alcoholic. And hopefully I've identified with that. Do I suffer from this mental, physical, spiritual malady? Am I powerless over alcohol? And is my life unmanageable? My answer to all those is yes. No doubt, and I'm willing to go to any lengths. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the obsession. And that was hard for me to accept. Why me? Why do I have to be alcoholic? God, I love that stuff. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control in his drink and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. This is my obsession. I've got to make it work for me again. This is like the last thing I have left. It's my dear old friend, and I've got to make it work. But at this point, I've actually come to accept that I can't. I've got the track record. I've done all the science experiments over and over. So the persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And I like to talk about illusion and delusion. Illusion is what I see outside, like if I go to a magic show and the magician fools me, that's an illusion. For me, a delusion goes on in my head. I fool myself. So this is the illusion. I see other people drinking normally, and I wonder, why can't I? Many pursued into the gates of insanity or death. Anybody relate to that? I mean, I'm not dead, but whew, got away with one. We learn that we had to, and we see him die all the time. We learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. And I ask people when I'm reading this, do you believe you're an alcoholic? And it's not to answer me. Your answer to me is useless. What does that inner voice to you say? And it'll sort of be illustrated in 4-9. You either do this or you won't. You're either desperate and believe that your life depends on this or you won't. And that's fine. That's fine. I mean, many of us have to go explore and experiment some more in the middle of 4 and actually even more often in the middle of 9. This is the first step in recovery. What? We had to fully concede to our innermost selves. I am alcoholic, powerless and unmanageable. I'm going to drink no matter what. This is my path. My best thinking on steroids, I drink. The delusion, this lie that I tell myself in my brain, that we are like other people, or presently maybe has to be smashed. And I had a guy I was working with, he was 20 years old, and I got him out of rehab, he was 5 months sober, and he said to me, how do you do that? And, you know, one of the greatest pieces of advice I can give to any sponsors, if you don't know, say, I don't know, but we'll find out together. Mm-hmm. And we went out and we asked people, because for me it was smashed. Like, by the time I got to this point in the book, I was done. I was all in on this book. If this book told me to like go stand on the roof and act like an antenna in my underwear, I would have tried it. Like, I was sold on this first step already. And so we went out and some people told me you got to go drink. And the book does say that. He wasn't willing to do that. And then what somebody we finally came up with was we looked at his experiences with alcohol. And again, this was like this is my first sponsee, and so I was new as a sponsor and maturing. But he had these ideas from the TV and from other people's experience of what drinking looked like. He had never been to the bar or the club, and we looked at all his drinking experiences previously, had never been like anybody else's. And he did come to believe that scene that he sees is not what's going to happen to him. And again, this was through his track record of how he had drank up to that point. His drinking experience was never like anybody else's. So, for me, that idea was smashed. It was done. I had done all the experiments. I knew that if I started drinking, it was over. And that I was going to drink no matter what, unless. We alcoholics, Mike, are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. Have I lost the ability to control my drinking? And I've had a few exceptions where I fool myself. That was years before the end, but we'll say probably around 2004. I actually had like the right buzz at the bar, and I went home. Probably once in my life. But I fool myself over that. And I always go back to that, because again, I need alcohol to do for me what it did for me. We know that no real alcoholic ever regains control. All of us, and this is my alcoholism. I'm recovered, but I'm not cured. I'm no longer suffering from alcoholism. I'm no longer suffering, but always being alcoholic. If I take my will back and start managing my life again, and I go drink today, spiritual malady, phenomenon of craving, mental obsession are back on me, and in fact, probably mental obsession and spiritual malady before I even drink. It's funny, I hear people say, I went out, what happened? You stopped going to meetings. And my experience is that's usually the last thing you did before you went out. Right? Because I can't face you people anymore. I've been living lies and misbehaving, and I'm bored in here, and I'm judging you, and I'm spiritually ill. So I stopped coming. And then eventually I turned to my good old friend, the only thing that ever took away the pain. Well, not ever, if I ever had a spiritual experience. So all of us felt at times that we were regaining control. But such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Anybody relate to that? How did I get here again? We are convinced to a man, to a person, every single one of us, that alcoholics of our type are in a grip of a progressive illness. This gets worse. I don't know. I never had 10 days before this time around, but all the stories I've heard, when people go back out, it's as if they never stopped. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We've tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. We're going to move to page 43. So we're talking here about the obsession. Oh my God, he's skipping so many pages. And again, anybody who wants to talk to me about why I do it the way I do it, there is a reason, and I didn't invent this. I have a guy, my sponsor is 23 years sober, who got this way of doing it through many other people. And once we get to page, to chapter 5, I don't read the steps out of how it works, but from there on, we're reading everything. And I go back and I read all the Bill story and the, what is it, 35 to 42 that we just moved past. I don't like to say skipped. We go back to that. So anyways, page 43, second to last full paragraph. So second full paragraph. Many doctors and psychiatrists agree with our conclusion that the alcoholic has to hit rock bottom is what they're talking about previously to that. One of these men, staff member of a world-renowned hospital, recently made this statement to some of us. What you say about the general hopelessness of average alcoholic's plight is, in my opinion, correct. As to two of you men whose stories I have heard, there's no doubt in my mind that you were 100% hopeless apart from divine help. Had you offered yourselves as patients at this hospital, I would not have taken you if I'd been able to avoid it. People like you are heartbreaking, too heartbreaking, though not a religious person, I have profound respect for the spiritual approach in such cases as yours. For most cases, there is virtually no other solution. So there's a doctor, human power, saying alcoholics of my type are beyond human aid. This is a doctor in his experience, and he was a big shot back then, and he really put a lot on the line to say that and to write stuff that he wrote earlier. So once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. And I like to pull out at certain times in this, because again, at certain times I have had a mental defense. Again, that one or two times that I was able to say, you know what, I shouldn't do this and not do it, that one or two times over, you know, 20-odd years, I convinced myself that I'm in control. This delusion, this lie that my brain tells me, and I believe it. My brain lies to me in my own voice. I believe it. But the truth is, when that thought to drink comes, I'm full of resentment or anger or whatever, and that thought to drink comes, it comes like a grain of sand in the back of my head. I mean, every time, and it grows and it grows and it comes before, and I'm drinking. I mean, it got to a point where I know when that thought in that spot comes, I'm going to use, and I may be able to push it off or prolong it for a few days or a week, but I'm going to drink. I have no defense. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. And we talked about that earlier, frothy emotional appeal, threats, incentives. The crying of my mom, the offer of a promotion, none of that was enough to stop me from drinking. I thought it was, and I'd try. His defense, my defense, must come from a higher power. And there's that word, must. You know, if and must, these are words I like to point out in here. As I've said many times, we suggest that you do this program, but if you decide to do this program, there is a way you have to do it. There are many ways of doing that same thing. But it's like if I was fatally ill, which I was, and the doctor gave me a prescription, I got to take the prescription exactly as he prescribes it. So here's my prescription. My defense must come from a higher power. And we read a little bit about that, page 567, spiritual experience, different words, interchangeable synonyms for change. But I had to accept spiritual help. So we're going to turn the page and... we're going to actually move, we'll just start at the beginning. In the preceding chapters, you've learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you if you honestly want to stop drinking and find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. So ask yourself, if you really honestly want to, those vows, I talked about that last week, like, I actually made a vow, an oath to myself, and I thought that had real power. Like, it was the only time I'd ever done that. I was like, I vow to myself that I will never drink again, and that was probably 2 years before I was done drinking. But I thought that had real power, because I never said that. I was desperate. Or have little control over the amount you take. I see people go out to the bar and go out to have a couple drinks or go out to get trashed, and they do that. Or they go out to have a couple drinks and they get trashed. I go out to get a nice buzz, and 5 days later I'm still drunk. Not drunk again, still drunk. Because I drink till I pass out, and then I wake up and drink till I pass out until I'm stopped by something. Handcuffs, ambulance, etc. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Again, we're not saying you have that illness. We're not trying to fit you into this illness. But if you relate to that, you may have an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer. Not here to convince you that. Not here to tell you you have to do that. But if this sounds enticing to you, this is what we offer. This is what the book offers. Step 12, having had a spiritual experience or awakening as a result of these steps. To the one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience it seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to faith. So now we're moving into step two, and we don't talk about alcohol anymore. Funny thing. This book doesn't, I think alcohol is mentioned one more time, and it's like as a thing, I think it's envisioned for you. But we're done talking about alcohol. First half of the first step, 1/24th of this program is about alcohol. Alcohol is not my problem. Alcohol was my solution. And I hear this a lot. You hear a lot of like beginners meetings or whatever, and I'm not knocking, do you? But I was taught, I have a mentor in California, and I met him, I see him all the time, we're tight. He tells me, if you keep coming today and focusing on alcohol, chances are you're going to drink again. Stop focusing on alcohol. That's not your problem. Focus on finding peace. So we're moving into step two. Hopefully, I've had these experiences. I've answered yes to these questions. It's going to ask me on the next page, are you an alcoholic? Well, I ask that. And I'm a guy who came in, like, not violently, but aggressively. I thought I was atheist, but I was agnostic. When I heard God, the word realm of the spirit is in here, czar of the heavens, like, I got really angry at those words. And my issue is growing up, I'll never tell you in this meeting what my belief of God to be is. Because it doesn't matter for you to have this experience. And I don't tell my sponsees any of my conception of God till we get to step 10. And they've recovered. But I only had one idea of God, and it was this when I was growing up. And so, like, even when you said of your own understanding or whatever, I just always went to that. And so step two is you know, it's funny because you go to like a 12 and 12 step two meeting, and a lot of times what we do for an hour is talk about what my conception of God is and what your conception of God is. And I think that's we go way too heavy on that. I think that right now this is really just about setting aside prejudice. Just saying, is it possible that there's something greater than me that could relieve me of my alcoholism? Is it possible? My favorite words, if and is it possible? And it is possible. I mean, I had it really simply broke down to me in two ways. One, a guy said to me, did you turn the sun on this morning? And I said, no. He said, now shut up in your head. Because my head goes on and I'll start to come up with BS, like a scientific experiment that I read like a page and a half of a 50-page story on. You know, but I got the thing I wanted out of it, and now I'm going to convince you. So I have to shut up in my head. No, I didn't turn the sun on this morning. I don't need to understand what turned the sun on this morning. It's greater than me. And then I was also asked, was alcohol more powerful than you? And I went, oh, yeah. Alcohol was certainly more powerful than me. At this point, that was the one thing I was absolutely certain. Alcohol was a power greater than myself. So then he said to me, is it possible that alcohol is not the most powerful thing in the universe? And I went, oh, yeah, that's very possible. Now shut up in your head. Now, this wasn't my sponsor, but this was one of the guys who I loved because he told me the truth and talked to me in ways with love, but he didn't co-sign and told me the truth directly, which is how I hear it. So that's what this is about. This isn't about you have to believe in God right now. This is about, is it possible that there's a power greater than yourself And if you tap into this power, you can never drink again because you found peace, not the other way around. I always thought if I could just stop drinking, I'd find peace. It never occurred to me I needed to find peace so that I could stop drinking. Never occurred to me. So to be doomed to an alcoholic death, oh wait, but continuous use means disaster, species. Okay, so to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. And again, I go back to, let me weigh that for a little bit. Let me think about those options. But I do. And the reason is accepting something that I've spent so much time fighting is huge for me. I'm letting go of a whole ton of energy and anger that I've put, you know. I've spent hours angry and coming up with stuff to fight any idea of God. And so to let that go was very difficult for me. So again, all we're asking is sweep aside your prejudice against the word God, higher power, rhythm of the universe, whatever it is. Sweep it away. Just can you set that over here and say it's possible that there's something greater than myself? And I'm not going to get into debates about door handles and chairs. I'm not going to get into that debate. I hear people say, yeah, absolutely and absolutely not. I don't know. What do I know? I know I have a plea for a power greater than myself. And as a result of gaining contact and access to that power, I haven't drank in a while because I found peace. So I'm talking a lot. So we're going to move from there on to the next page, page 47. We're going to read, lack of power, that was our dilemma. What is my dilemma? Lack of power. I have no power when it comes to drinking or not. I still had the power, like powerless over alcohol. I still had a choice. I fought that for a long time. But again, here I am identifying with this. Lack of power is my dilemma. I have no choice whether or not I'm going to drink left to, when I'm newcomer in this part of the book, whether or not I'm going to drink. Sooner or later, I'm going to drink. Or use other things. You know, I treat my alcoholism with all kinds of stuff. I'm an alcoholic through and through. But we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. So that's kind of a promise in there. So it says there is. Like it leaves me with these really hard choices. Like, there is a solution, just that paragraph, and then that paragraph that starts with, there is a solution. There's a lot of hope in that line for me. And there's a lot of hope in that line. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Oh, there is a power. Obviously, but where and how are we to find this power? And I love the way, well, that's exactly what this book is about. That's exactly what this book is about. About what? We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Simple. Clear cut. That's what this book is about. Exactly. Its main object, the main object of this book, is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. Wow. Solve your drink problem. That's what this book is designed to do. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. So I've learned that I suffer from a spiritual malady. I can't stand how I feel. I can't deal with emotions. So I drink. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God, higher power, whatever you want that to be. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. And many of you probably identify with this. I sat in these rooms and I'm like, dang, these people like know this thing I have. When I walked in here, now I hear people say, like, I wasn't as bad as you people. I came in and I'm like, the real thing's here. You ain't seen nothing yet. I mean, that was, you know, always ego with me. But I'm like, I am the worst you've ever seen. And then I start hearing, there are people like me. And then you mention God or higher power and I go, no thanks. It's a cult, it's a whatever. Alcohol, misery, the great persuader finally got me to a spot where we're at here where I'm willing to say, okay, maybe. So here difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we do. Okay, so I read that. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. I'm going to move to page 47. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. Understanding, not definition. This is important. I hear people all the time define their God, put him in a box. And if I could put God in a box, I'm God again. So I just need to have an understanding. I need to seek something. Power greater than myself. And, you know, to each his own. If you disagree with me, that's fine. Like, whatever. You know, like, it's working for me and that's working for you. Who cares? I found peace. Hopefully you found peace. But for me, this means I need to have a conception, an idea. I need to have a big God that can do anything if I tap into. I don't need to sit and define and put parameters around what God is. I don't need to. This applies, too, to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. So benefit from other people's spiritual experience. You don't have to buy fully into what anybody else is saying. Take what works for you and see if it works. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth. So wait, I'm powerless over alcohol and I need spiritual help. Right? And exactly, this book is written, that's exactly what this book is about, to teach me how to have a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, right? So it's telling me here, at the start, that's all I need to commence spiritual growth. Just seeking. Honestly asking myself, is it possible? What any of these people is saying true about a power greater than themselves. To the effect, our first conscious relationship with God is, at the start, this is what we need yet. To affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood Him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which then seemed entirely out of reach, right? When I flipped that switch and let go of these walls that I had, like, I think I got this from Chad, so forgive me. Like, I plant a flag on an idea, and then I build a fort, an impenetrable fort around it. And the idea sometimes is so asinine and ridiculous. But the only thing I build the fort with is the stuff that I like that makes sense, that's in line with it. And you may have great chinks and disagreements with what with this fort and this argument that I've built, but I just throw those out. And I spent my whole life doing that, like this idea, and I've spent hours on building this fort, this castle around some asinine idea. To let that go is really difficult for me. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting, okay, so we read that. That was growth, but if we wish to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So where do we begin? Just letting go. It's funny, when I stopped fighting, the fight was over. I heard somebody say surrender in a really beautiful way. It was to turn my will over to something or someone that cares deeply about me. To turn my thoughts and actions over to something or someone that cares deeply about me. That was growth, okay? So we used our own conception, however limited it was. And it tells me right there, however limited your conception is, if you're willing to say if it's possible, maybe it's possible that someday there could be, maybe not, but maybe, a power greater than yourself. Like, that's enough to start. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, or be willing to be willing to be willing to be willing. For me, it's anything but absolutely no, because that's where I was. Here's absolutely no, and like the rest of the scale goes to the ceiling, and I'm like a hair away from absolutely no. But there's a maybe in there. And that's where I started. We emphatically assure him he is on his way. So with that, you've started. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. I want to talk a lot about this spiritual structure, and everybody's heard it. I don't want to spend too much time in it, but I've got a foundation, and that's my first step. My absolute belief that I have this thing, and I'm totally screwed. I'm totally screwed in the first step. If I sit in the first step, I am totally screwed. I will drink no matter what. So now I'm going to build this arch that we'll talk about more in 5, but I'm going to, as we get to 5, but there's this archway that I'm going to walk through in 5, a new man, leaving behind everything except what I hold on to, an opportunity to be completely free and reborn in a spiritual way, clean. And this is the cornerstone. So now we've got a foundation, and these are the cornerstones that I'm going to build the rest of this arch, and each piece needs to be put firmly in place. If my first step is shaky and I don't really believe and I think that I can still control my drinking, I'm probably not going to do a thorough and honest fourth step. I'm going to have reservation. And I'm saying I don't know about you. I don't know. Some people just come in here to not drink and that's all they ever do. And that's fine. For me, I'm miserable when I don't drink. So I want to build this arch that I'm going to walk free. This is about freedom. I can go anywhere. Like, to each his own. I serve alcohol in my home. If I have a party, I serve alcohol. You know, I go to casino night last night for my kids, and it's all play money, and it's a fundraiser, and there's alcohol there. And it's like the coolest thing in Mountainside. I'm going. Okay? And I'm not obsessing. Like, it's not even a thing for me. And if I need to go get my wife a bottle of wine, then I go get my wife a bottle of wine or a glass of wine, whatever. Provided I'm in fit spiritual condition. This is about freedom. And we'll talk more later about that. I don't recommend doing that if you're on step two. You know? So, that was great news to us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we all say, "I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if only I could believe as he believes." Not true. I did not start believing the way I believe. Today I believe there's a power greater than myself that has relieved me of the desire to drink. Desire to drink, let alone the obsession. I wish I had what they're doing, but I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. Again, just maybe, if, is it possible? Let me move up to page 55. I'm going to start with the second full paragraph. Actually, we were fooling ourselves. This is, again, more, we're in setting aside prejudice still, we're in we agnostics. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And again, power greater than yourself, whatever works for you. Okay? But what this is saying, and this was a big awakening for me, like, at some point, I realized that I had a desperate need for a power greater than myself. And that I had put a ton of energy into fighting anything like that. Because I made stuff happen in my life. You know, I did. Like, if I wanted a job, I went and got it. If I wanted a promotion, I went and got it. Whatever it was, except when it came to alcohol. Alcohol was the one thing that no matter how bad I wanted, it couldn't stop. So, I realized that I wasn't the greatest thing in the universe. And that deep down I needed somebody else to be in charge. I was tired of being in charge of everything in my life. I was tired of having to make force. And my life was a wreck anyways. Like, I drove it into nothing. So anyways, I had sidetracking there. Lost my train of thought anyways. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, we found that great reality deep down within us. It is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. So how cool is that? God has actually found, I find God by digging deep down within me. And it really comes by cleaning out me. I need to empty out my sick. I need to empty out all the yuck. All the yuck, all the sick, all the selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and fearful ways. And that's where I find God. God enters in and starts to redirect me. And I want to get ahead. That's 4 through 9. But there was good news and was hope in this for me. Like, and maybe it was somewhat ego, but like, okay, it's in me. You know? Because at this point, I'm stopping the fight against the word God. Like, you always had to say a power greater than yourself with me. And now I'm just kind of like, you know, God's very efficient. G-O-D, you all know what I'm talking about. And I was past that whole, well, if I say God, you're going to assume I'm this or this or this or have that belief. And I was past all that. So we can only, I don't know, let me go back to that. If you're new and you're struggling with this idea of God or power greater than yourself, highlight that last two sentences and see if that's something you can internalize. See if that's something that resonates with you. Is it possible that deep down inside, if you empty out all your selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and fearful ways, that you'll find God there? Is it possible? Let me say one other thing. This is my experience with God. Like, I had this vision of, like, I'm in this room, and it's just surrounded by doors. And if I pick the wrong door, like, God's behind one of these doors. And if I pick the wrong door, I'm totally screwed. And what I've come to experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is that he's behind every single one of those doors. Like, come on, dude. Like, please, come. And he's waiting to hug me and hold me and kiss me and love me. This is not, God is not mad at me for You know, my power greater than myself wants me to do good things. The end result of this whole process is helping people. That's the end result of this whole process. That's step 12. The meaning of life is in step 12. Practicing these principles, loving and helping people. And that's what God wants of me. So I'm not going to make it too hard to find him or her or it or whatever. God wants me on his team. Not that I'm a great teammate or anything, but he certainly wants my powers not used the way they were. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then. That's sort of a, I'm losing track of the word, there's sort of a condition there. So if I can clear, if you can sweep away some prejudice and you can think honestly, set aside your prejudice, think honestly, then you can join us on the broad highway. And I love that wording, broad highway. Like, again, we're talking about the broad highway of God. It's broad. I thought I was trying to get through this, like, this thread. You know, but it does. The book does say it's wide, broad, roomy, and all-inclusive. So there isn't this thin little path that you have to do it exactly this way. It's a broad highway that we walk together. With this attitude, what attitude? Sweeping away prejudice, thinking honestly, searching diligently. You can join us on the broad highway. It's only all you need to begin. So with that attitude, you cannot fail. How cool is that? You cannot fail. Cannot. It doesn't say probably won't, may not. It says if I can keep this attitude, sweeping away prejudice, thinking like honestly and diligently, cleaning out self and letting God in, I cannot fail. That is a promise. That's pretty cool. Oh, your promises. Well, you know, we keep coming back, those of us that have covered for some reason. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. Open mind. That's all I need here is an open mind. We're going to move to page 58. How it works. All right. So I'm going to read this down to, we'll do the three pertinent ideas next week, and we'll really start digging into 3 and 4. There's actually a lot of step 1 and 2 review from 60 to 62. And honestly, like, I wonder, and I don't, like I said, I don't take from this book and start doing it my own way, but I really wonder sometimes if I could take a sponsee through steps 1, 2, and 3, just starting at the three pertinent ideas and reading into 62 and 63. Although we don't really touch a lot on the physical in there, but we hit a lot of the ego and the spiritual malady. So, but again, I do it this way. I'm not trying to take shortcuts. I'm trying to get people off the ledge. As I said before, most of the people I sponsor have been in and out for years. And they don't have months to spend on the first step. They need to understand the experience they've already had and get writing. They need to get to that stuff that's killing them. So this is how it works. Chapter 5. And like, honestly, we could have so many meetings just on this chapter. When you really break this down, it's phenomenal. So, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And my sponsor likes me to reword that as switching rarely and never. And that would say never have we seen a person fail who has... Wait. Thoroughly have we seen a person fail who has never followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. And I thought I was this. I was incapable, it seemed. It seemed. Just like seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You know, that I really have to believe that I'm completely hopeless at the end of my drinking to do this. That's seemingly hopeless. Because here I am. Clearly I wasn't hopeless. But it seemed hopeless. I believed I was hopeless. And this is what it's saying to me is I can absolutely believe that I'm incapable of being honest with myself. But I may learn that I can. You know, fall through with this process, take instructions, you know, write this incredibly simple 4-step and find out. But those who don't recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves. And, one of the things I like to talk about here too is, you know, sometimes we get frustrated. I'll say I get frustrated. Why can't you get it? You know, the book does say for whatever reason, some of us just won't get this. Some people just won't get this. And that's the deal. Some people are going to die. And that's horrible and it's sad. But I'm going to say trying to help those that don't have to. You know, unfortunately, the will of an alcoholic is very strong. And sometimes it's stronger than the body. I'm just lucky that my will gave out before my body, you know. So anyways, there are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. So it says, all I need to do is grasp and develop. Like when I came in, everything that came out of my mouth was a lie. So how do I start doing this? I stop and I go, that was a lie. Which is very difficult to do. But I learned to do it. I learned to sit like, you know, I got a guy we all know, and I shared this last week, and like he tells a story of his dad asking what he had for lunch, and he says chicken nuggets, and he had pizza, and they're like, no reason for lying, but like this is just my mind never, it's what my mind does, it lies. Their chances are okay. So there are those two who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. So you may have serious mental or emotional disorders. You may have diagnosis or whatever. Many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. So what this is telling me is nobody's beyond broken. You know, I had a couple diagnoses and I was all kinds of medicated when I got here. And then I got sober and the doctor was like, you don't need any of this. You had alcohol-induced psychosis. And then I meet people, and I'm not telling you any of these, or these are the only options, okay? But then I meet people who are self-medicating diagnosis. This is my brother. My brother's got 5 DUIs. My brother's gone to way more AA meetings than me. And my brother's paranoid schizophrenic who was trying to medicate an illness. And my brother comes to my house now, and because he's been to so many damn AA meetings, you know, he buys a six-pack, he drinks 2 beers the whole Christmas holiday out of the six-pack, and then, you know, he comes and hangs out with me and my friends. I'm like, you know, you can have a couple beers. And he's like, why would I do that? I'm going to hang out with you and your alcoholic friends. That'd be disrespectful. And I'm like, well, we should be free. But, like, he was trying to medicate a mental illness, and it looked like an alcoholic, right? 5 DUIs. Looks like an alcoholic. I did an intervention on my brother. It was great. Epic. You know? And here I was still drinking. I'm like drinking at the intervention. You know? Our stories, okay. I just want to share this. I read this as instructions. I'm very like semantically oriented. I read this book very literally. And, you know, I teach my sponsees how to share. I teach my sponsees how to speak. And I believe that like the most powerful thing one of my sponsees can say in a meeting is, my name is so-and-so, I have 21 days, and I'm writing my third column. That's powerful. Mm-hmm. And I teach them this in the beginning. What else do you have to really offer? Like, that's powerful. How many times has somebody with 90 days who hasn't even opened a book come up and like, dude, how did you do that? You know, and they get inspired to get to work. This I read as instructions on what I should be doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this says, our stories disclose in a general way, not exact precise details of my drinking career. My story should disclose in a very general way. I should be illustrating my threefold illness. Spiritual, mental, physical, unmanageability, powerlessness, selfish, self-centered, dishonest, fearful. I should be illustrating in a general way, not with exact precise stories to make you laugh. What I used to be like. And it says what we used to be like. And I hear a lot of what it was like, and that's fine if that works for you. But for me, when I think it, I apply it to all the external stuff. I have to bring this home. What I used to be like. What we used to be like. And I told you, I often change the word we or us in here for Mike or I, because I like to apply things to other people and be like, well, I'm not that. Insanity, not me. So this is telling me in a general way, without like just detailed funny ha-ha war stories, I should be describing my alcoholism, the program of action, but here, what we used to be like, what I used to be like, selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and fearful. I should be illustrating what that looks like. Mm-hmm. Not what it was like. This isn't, here's how I grew up in my drinking in the college years. For me, this is how I read this. These instructions on how I should talk in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a great pamphlet. I carry a lot of pamphlets with me. Problems Other Than Alcohol. And Bill Wilson writes, the sole purpose the sole purpose, meaning the only purpose, right? Anybody not know the word soul? It's a very serious word. The soul. The only purpose of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is the practice and teaching of the 12 steps. This is telling me not to come in here and talk about the turkey sandwich I had for lunch. Or how my wife pissed me off. Or my bad day at work. Unless I'm illustrating in a general way my selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and fearful ways. Or how God got me through that. How this solution got me through it. So again, for me, and I'm not telling you what you have to do, but this is telling me in a general way I should describe what I used to be like. What happened is the 12 steps. And again, I used to think what it was like was, ha-ha, here's how I grew up. What happened was like the end, my bottom. No, that's all in there in the first part. What happened is the 12 steps, right? Isn't that the bridge to what we are like now? So what I used to be like, selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and fearful, and I acted out on all of it. I still am those things, but I don't act out on my every thought. I don't take my every want. What happened is I found a power greater than myself, and as a result of that, I'm at peace. And as a result of that peace, I'm not drinking. And what we are like now, hopefully behaving, hopefully a contributing positive member of society, helping people, showing up. I'm a father, I'm a son, I'm a brother, I'm a friend, and I show up for all those things. If you decided you want what we have, what we are like now, and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So if you don't want what we have, and you're not identifying with the first step, then you're not ready to take the steps. And that's fine. Now, how many times have you come in here, and I used to be really guilty of this. I used to put big expectations on the alcoholic. I can't believe you did it again. You're drinking again. The deal is, of course you did. Of course you went out. That's what we do. It's exactly what the first step says. No matter what, you're going to drink. There is another option. But if you're not willing to accept that other option, then you're going to drink. Or maybe you're not an alcoholic. But this is what the book says to me. Now, a newcomer comes in, I hug him and say, of course you did. You know? And if you want to go drink again, I mean, my sponsor and I, we gave a guy $5 the other night to start his next journey. He's sharing in a meeting how he wants to drink. And I know this guy well enough that I have that license with him. And I went up and I said, hey, so-and-so, we all three know you're going to drink. He's like, yeah. I said, you're just seeking attention. Yeah. I said, do you want $5 to get started? And he said, yeah. And then he asked me for a cigarette and told me that wasn't enough to buy what he needed. And I said, have fun. Good luck. But here's one more thing, and I'll wrap it up with this. I remember there's a Starbucks that I used to go to in Queens. And I see a guy bumming money in front of the liquor store. And he's bumming money for liquor. I see the guy out there all the time. He's a local drinker. I don't know if he's an alcoholic. I don't know if he's homeless. I probably looked homeless when I was at the liquor store at 9 a.m. shaking, helping him open the gates because they're 2 minutes late and I'm hurting. I went in and I bought the guy a bottle of vodka. Oh my gosh, you can't do that. And this is actually an area where the medical field does agree with us. That any time we're getting in the way of somebody's bottom, we're enabling them. The funny thing is, as the guy said to me, I don't drink that crap, I want Hennessy. But what I just did with this guy was I saved him a whole bunch of humiliation. $4 that he's trying to bum a quarter at a time. How many, you know, maybe 100 people he had to not ask now. I bought his ear for a couple minutes. And when if he ever wants a way out and he sees me walking by, he knows he can come up and approach me and I won't judge him. You know, I'm not trying to stop an alcoholic from drinking. This book never says don't drink. In fact, it says go drink. Go find out your truth. If you want to stop for good and all and you're willing to do anything to stop, we got an answer for that. Thanks for letting me share.